Get ready to whiten those knuckles and hold fast as we talk the most dangerous, daring, and epic sea stories ever told with professional and volunteer ocean rescuers.
Whether lifeguards rushing into the waves from their towers, police and fireboats pulling victims from beyond the surf line, or bystanders taking action to save another, those who go down to the sea enter the most challenging and dangerous environment on Earth.
Only here will you hear their stories and the lessons gained through their experience. I'm your host, Phil.
And I'm Bill.
And we welcome you aboard They Had to Go Out podcast. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of They Had to Go Out podcast, special edition in partnership with the Mariners Museum out in Newport News, Virginia. Really excited and stoked to be partner with them, and incredibly stoked for a returning guest today who's going to tell a truly epic story that we already got some details on. So thanks for joining us.
Yeah, welcome everybody. We're really glad to have you. Glad to be here with you. First time with the Mariners Museum. Excited for this partnership and looking forward to hearing a great story,
dude. And for all you Mariners memberships out there that aren't able to go to the museum, I feel your pain. My favorite museum in the country is the Mariners Museum. So hopefully we give you something today that's powerful to listen to, kind of uplifting, and it'll make you just appreciate the guys that go to work on sea. And who we have today is Mr. Jacob Walding, originally from Cocoa Beach, Florida. Now a deputy harbor master with the San Mateo County Harbor District, stationed at Pillar Point, which is out just south of San Francisco, where they work the biggest break in the country at Mavericks. If you haven't heard it, I will definitely get Jacob to share some details. But he's been working there since 2007. Jacob, we welcome you to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me again, guys.
Yeah, we're glad to have you, Jacob. And with that, what's your most dangerous, daring, or epic sea story or stories?
Part two.
All right. So this one was a good one. It came around. I don't have the date specifically in front of me, but it was early fall. We had you know, our usual weather pattern out here. This is good weather, good small swell through the summer. And as a lot of these calls go, I just sat down at lunch, getting ready to eat a little peanut butter sandwich, get refueled and keep going. And we get the call. It came out over the Marine radio, VHF channel 74. This particular call was, we've got a potential overturned vessel in the surf north of Mavericks. So for all of you that aren't familiar with our geographic location, the Mavericks big wave surf spot's right out in front of the harbor. Contrary to what you would believe, we actually don't have all that many rescues right there. It's a pretty well-known spot. People know to stay away from it. This particular reef is on the other side of what is called Rossi's Cove. So the left, if you look at Mavericks from a Google Earth perspective, you have to the left or to the north of Mavericks, you have a big cove called Rossi's Cove. And then you get up into kind of some finger reefs up towards the distillery and off of Fitzgerald Marine Reserve. And that's where this one took place.
And hey, Jacob, the difference between the reefs there. So I know Mavericks goes up to just inches basically of water over top the reef. What's it look like? In the area you're talking about.
So the area I'm talking about is that's a great question. Really, that's why this particular rescue happened. Great rock fishing in this area. The reefs are anywhere from, they'll get up to about 4 foot deep, 3 foot deep, all the way up to dry reef. And then you'll have a kind of a lagoon on the backside and some deeper water all the way up to the sand. So depending on where you're fishing, you can have anywhere from, 20 foot of water on out to 50 foot of water. And then inside of that kind of that 20 foot mark, depending on the tide, is that'll drop, pull, 4 or 5 foot of water out of there.
Yeah.
It can be 2 to 3 foot.
These are rock reefs, correct, Jim?
Yeah, all rock reefs. Big shelf kind of slab style reefs. Sorry about the dog in the background, guys.
What's his name?
It adds authenticity.
Yeah, exactly.
Has he got a cool name?
So So anyhow, so the call comes out. Hey, there's potential maybe overturned boat. We're not exactly sure. And they hang on 1 second, guys. I'm sorry.
I knew it was going to get to him, man. I knew it.
Hey, I'm just glad it's not my dog.
Yeah, that's funny. Well, could you hear my barking? See, I can mute myself though when the recording happens. So like, all I could hear was him talking. But yeah, when he talks, I couldn't hear it.
Absolutely, right, compare your dog.
Hey, Jacob, what's the dog's name?
Rain.
Rain, nice dude. I thought it was gonna be like Dark Heart 2 or something. You know, some.
No, the kid's name.
Nice, I like it.
Do that stuff. So. All right, back to where we were at. So anyhow, yeah, so the call comes in, maybe a potentially an overturned vessel. So we load up, and in the previous podcast, I kind of explained the framework of how we work in the county, and it's part of the OES system. Just to go over it real quick, we're one agency comprised of, we have sheriffs, state park lifeguards, fire, the Coast Guard is one of those members, and then the Harbor Patrol. And so on that particular day, there's three patrolmen on duty. There's myself, patrolman, a good friend of mine, Randy Bankard, and a senior patrolman at the time, Mike Williams. And that guy was an absolute legend. He was one of those awesome guys that you get in as a young guy, and you're relatively young guy. I shouldn't say I was too young, but relatively young. And he's just got the sea stories for days. You know, the Alaska king crab time he did on a king crab boat back in the 80s. And, you know, it's just one of those guys. And he brought a lot to the table. So at that point, he was 50. Let's see here. He'd have been 56 years old. So pretty getting up there in age for being a
salty. We call that salty.
Yeah. Salty guy, you know. Yeah. And he was a heck of an operator. And we worked a lot of cases together. He was not a surfer or a swimmer by any means. He was proficient in the water as far as swimming went, but he left this kind of the surf line to us. And he really put himself out there and did a great job in this one, which you'll hear a little later in the story. So we send the boat with Deputy Bankard on board. He takes a fire crew. We request a fire crew through the county radio. They come down in case we have medical that we can get to the boat. We still don't really know what we have. We know we have a potential overturned boat. We're not sure what we're going to find on scene. We've got some people on cliffs hundreds of feet away, 300 to 500 feet away. So they're trying to kind of figure out what they're even looking at. We don't have any resources on the cliff yet that can to give us that good information, that good detail. So we do our kind of pre-brief, and then we send the boat with a fire crew, and we're going to meet them up on the RWC. So we suit up, takes us a few minutes to get out of the office, get our gear on, and we cut the reef. We go up, so the boat goes around the reef, obviously, that's right in front of the harbor. So they're always, if they can get out ahead of us 5 or 6 minutes, it's good, because we're going to shoot the reef, go right up the breakwall through the reef at Mavs, and then we kind of punch out right there when we kind of time the swell and can get out. That particular day, we didn't have too much wind on it, as I recall. It was 5 to 15. Pretty consistent day. As you guys know from working in that section of coast, we have more small craft days than we have calm days. So this is, for us, it's a calm day. And we had, I believe it was I think the official was 8 to 10 foot seas at something like 16 to 18 seconds. So pretty good sized period of swell for that time of year. So I should stop there. So we have a lot of rescues in the harbor in that kind of early fall time, where guys have been up and they've been fishing reefs all summer long. They've had no real swell to deal with, and they're able to tuck in tight, and they use their GPS to kind of get back to the same reef or spots of reef where the fish are holding up. And so what happens is we have these summertime conditions with all of a sudden these wintertime swells. And so early fall, September, October, normally October, we're definitely getting our first big one. And if I remember correctly, this one happened in October. So we're running up. We kind of run through Mavericks. Mavericks is breaking. It's 15 foot, maybe 20 foot faces. Not too big of a deal. We're kind of used to that. And so we get outside of Mavs and we turn north and we run up and we get up into the cove. And now at this point, I've got comms on the radio. The boats basically were running in unison with the boat, and they get offshore and they kind of post up right outside of the breaking waves on some of the outer reefs. And we go in to do a pass. We kind of we know where they're at. We get some comms in the radio that says, hey, they're between you and the boat. And so we go in to do a sweep. We get into, we're probably.
And Jacob, I question for you, because you're on a PWC, right? You're calling them. What's the term you guys use?
I'm sorry. Yeah, we use RWCs, rescue watercraft.
There you go, rescue watercraft. So if you're on a boat, right, from a Coast Guard perspective, and you enter a surf zone, like you said, on the West Coast, you've got a pretty long period, so you kind of see these things coming for the most part. But on a boat, if you're headed in and the wave starts to break, then you square up to the wave and you take it bow on, right? You let the bow just kind of chop through it. On a jet ski or an RWC, I'm assuming that option doesn't exist, especially for 15-foot seas. So how do you navigate a surf zone on a jet ski?
So the real ability of the RWC is seen in the speed and at which it can maneuver in the surf line in between waves. So they're small craft, 14 to 16 foot in length. They have high horsepower, so they're very nimble. You can move them around and throw them around almost like if you were riding a quad or a dirt bike in a sand kind of pit. So what you would do if you have a big breaking wave, you're not going to try to climb it. I personally don't try to climb whitewash that's more than 8 foot, 9 foot. It becomes a risk versus reward thing. You know, they don't have a lot of grab in whitewash. If you're riding a turbo versus non-turbo, there's issues there with intake and the impeller and losing thrust, as you guys know from the jet drives that you operated.
Yeah, just with aerated water, right? I mean, you get in the aerated water and it just shuts down.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. So you still use all those same fundamentals of pushing a boat through breaking surf. But what we'll do is we'll run inside until the whitewash kind of diminishes down until it's into that 5 to 6 foot range and then punch through it. Once the set passes, you know, it can be 2 to 10 waves, whatever it is, then you can run out and make some ground and do your work.
Cool. And I'd ask you too. So again, on a boat, right? Even though I'm sure everybody sees the video and I'm not sure how familiar all the audience is with surf operations, but on a boat, when you take these swells, you're not doing it at speed. I mean, usually it's clutched in. Right. As the wave passes under you or you punch through it, you kind of back down so that the boat just rides back on the backside of the wave. On an RWC, are you punching through? Like, I mean, even on those 5 to 7 foot waves, that's still a pretty big wave, man. Are you guys doing it at speed?
That's a lot of waves.
Yeah, are you doing that at speed and then just let off on the backside of the come down the back? How does that work?
So it depends on the model of RWC that you're riding. But for the most part, we are not trying to catch. You don't want to get any air on the bottom of the machine as you come out of the back of the wave. Most of these waves that you're going to go through are actually going to go over top of you. So you don't have the lift out of the hull that you would have in a boat. So as you square up to a whitewash, there's a technique that we use where we actually duck down, turn our heads to the side, and get behind the handlebars. That's going to break that whitewash. But we're actually going to kind of punch through almost like you would if you were surfing and you need to get under a wave. It's more of that type of technique than actually the hull lifting you up on top of it. So it's wet. You know, your whole comm set, you're going to get water in your ears, and you get used to it. The boats are fairly heavy. You're looking at 1,000 pounds on the light. I think they have them down now to like 700 pounds. But at that time, 1,000 pounds to 1,400 pounds was pretty common. So they're pretty heavy vessels, and they have a low water line. So you're basically going to come up to it. It's going to scoop the water. And if you're standing upright, that whitewash is going to hit you in the chest. It'll just peel you off the machine.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, okay. I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like duck diving when you're surfing.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So back to the story. So we're inside. We take a run into the surf line, very common, hop on the back of a wave. The machines are plenty fast to hold speed with the swell. And if you kind of get in between swells, it gives you time in case somebody pops up out of one of the swells that's in front of you, and it gives you time to react. And you definitely don't ever want to run anybody over, right? So we're kind of doing our standard thing. The two of us are in between a swell. We're 15, 20 feet apart. And we come in and we spot them right away. And there's six people in the water and a state park lifeguard. And he's got them corralled up. I'd worked with James. James was his name. Great guy, stud athlete, stud swimmer. And he's got them kind of bunched up. He's got his float out. He's got his float around him. He's kind of got a hold at one end of the leash, and he's kind of got him corralled, and he's holding him, and he's kicking him off the reef. So we look to the inside, more towards the beach, and there's some, basically that slab reef comes up to where it's almost dry. There is water across it, but it's no more than 2 foot deep, you know? And so he's trying to keep them off of there, because if they get pushed through there, that on-scene condition that we had that particular day was about 9 to 11 foot of waves that were breaking in that area. So that's quite a bit of whitewash. It's pretty traumatic. If you're not a swimmer or a surfer or know how to kind of manage that type of environment, it's pretty easy to get beat up and drown. So he had been in the water for quite a few minutes. I believe it was approximately like 12 to 15 minutes by the time we got on scene. And I had worked some pretty hard cases with him in the past, where pretty physically demanding cases. And you just get to know your teams. You guys know this, and a lot of your listeners do, is you get on scene and, you know, my chipper way, "Hey guys, Pillar Point Harbor, how you doing today, James?" You know, and just kind of joking around with him. And he looked right at me. He just gave me that look, and he was like, "I need help." And I was like, "Oh, all right, he's to the end." I know just by him saying that and the way he reacts, I'm like, "Oh boy, we're in bad shape," you know? So we've got six of them piled up. They're kind of all hanging on each other. And I'm like, "Man, I don't even know how we're going to pull them out. Our machines, these RWCs are great machines, but if you approach a group of people and they panic and start climbing all over you, they're going to roll that machine. There's really, you know, there's really only one way to get somebody onto a machine. It's very, you know, you got to be counterbalanced. You can bring them up the board and the back, but if they all grab it, they're going to turtle it. You're not going to be able to get out of there." So my partner and I decide to take my machine offshore, and we'll set it adrift, and I'll hop on his machine, and I wear a fin belt. I've got a fin, I get out a knife, and some other gear that we always carry. And these were the pre-life jacket days. I think I mentioned in the last one that we went to life jackets and we're on several stages, but these were the pre-life jacket days. So I've got a wetsuit and my fin belt, and you know, being in the water my whole life, once I put those fins on, I feel almost superhuman. You know, it's unbelievable how much thrust they can give you, you know. So we run back in, and I slide off the machine, and I do my introduction, which is something that I don't know how many of your members or coast or lifeguard guys, but as we're kind of taught, it's identify yourself, calm them down, let them know you're there to help. So I give them the quick speech, and they're all panicked. There's a language barrier. They're a Hispanic family. And so right away I'm like, "Hey, I'm going to take the kids first." And I go, and there's a young child. I later find out that he was 6 years old, and there's an 11-year-old. They both look very young in the water. And so I just went towards the smallest one. Well, the father was holding on to that child. He was to the end of his rope. He thought he was going to die. And it, no fault of his, he was using his son, who had a flotation device on, as flotation. And, you know, I mean, it sounds, you know, I'm mindful to tell people that in these situations, as you guys know, when people are at the end of the road and they think when they really realize that they're going to die, you can't fault them for anything they do. I mean, even if it's hanging on to their own kid and halfway drowning him.
Yeah, your lizard brain ticks over, and the human body will do everything it can to stay alive, and you're not even thinking at that point.
Yeah, and it's you know, I mean, most people in society will never really get to see that, and so I want people to have that reaction of, "Oh, what a bad father. I would have done this," because you don't know what you would do. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah, man, and you just said too that, you know, like a top tier athlete who is a professional lifeguard at that beach just gave you the look, you know, and that
I'm done.
Yeah, if you've seen that look and you are a professional rescuer, right? I don't think there's anything else like it. I think that's more serious than any look that I would get from a victim, right? Because if he's in a bad way, it's serious. This is go time.
He actually understands what's happening.
Right. Yeah. There you go.
And he's definitely given it. He had given it what he could at that point, you know.
Right.
And so so I'm in the water now. I've got my comm set on, and I swim up to him, and I grab hold of the 6-year old, and I don't speak Spanish to my detriment, but I tell the the gentleman, I say, hey, let him go. I've got him. I got to get him out of here. And he's not responding. And so I kind of push and try to break his grips and try to be as you know, mindful as I can. And he won't let go. He's bear hugging him. And I can see, I thought at that point that the child might have been C-spined. He might have been hit by the rail of the boat going over. I didn't know what his condition was. But he was not moving at all, not moving his hands, not moving his, he wasn't talking. Eyes were open, but he was basically to the point of almost unconsciousness. And so I had to get him out of there. So I grabbed him around kind of his chest. I was on his right side. I remember that. And so I grab him with my left hand and pull him tight into me. And I've got an uncle kind of behind me to my left, and I've got his father or whoever it was to his right. And I pushed and kind of pushed and kind of kicked at him with my fin, and he wasn't letting go. And so I had to use, you know, the kind of brutal tactics. And so I went to hammer fist and started kind of pounding on his face and used my forearm. And I hit him a lot of times. I pounded on him until basically he kind of, I don't know if he was to the point of unconsciousness, but he kind of rolled back at some point and just kind of fell back like that. And when he did that, I grabbed the kid with my other arm, put my fin in his, in the man's belly, kicked off of him and swam underwater and started dolphin kicking away, holding the boy's mouth, and popped up. And once I was distant from the group, where my partner comes right in, and the waves are breaking on us kind of constantly through this rescue. But these are, you know, when you're looking at 8-foot whitewash, it seems dramatic in the impact zone, but when you really get used to that kind of environment, we're kind of on the shoulder a little bit, so it's, you're getting hit, but you're not getting hit with direct force of the waves.
We've got a lot more of this episode to go, and we'll get right back to it after this short ad from our sponsor.
So, you know, we're kind of just all going through this together, and my partner swings in the RWC, and the boy, being young and only 6, was easy for me to manhandle. I threw him on the sled and on the back of the RWC and pinned him down, and we rode out to the boat. Didn't have to get through too much surf. My partner was able to kind of run to the south and get kind of to a channel and get out to the boat. We got him over to the waiting fire crew on board the vessel. And then we went back in. We shot back in. The next kid I was going to take was the 11-year-old. Same thing. I got in the water, and my partner swang. He kind of brought us in real close to the group, and sure enough, one of the adults jumped, like not jumped, but lunged and grabbed kind of the sidewalls of the machine and tried to kind of climb on the machine, and I had to drag him kind of off the machine, and you know, no, you're not going. Then my partner took off, and you know, and then we got the 11-year-old, and we took him out, and basically we kept that rotation out to the boat and back. We ended up getting all of them out of there. Subsequently, it was, you know, the time it took, I couldn't tell you how long. It felt like I was in the water for a long time, but it was a matter of minutes. I mean, you know, it felt like hours. I was emotionally and physically exhausted by the end of it. We grabbed the state park ranger last. Right at the end of the rescue, another one of his colleagues had swam off the beach and was kind of, you know, like, hey, man, you all right? And, you know, able to kind of give him some help. And once we got him on everybody on board the Almar, the Coast Guard had been called. The Hilo was en route. There's a spin up time with that, as you guys know. Mm-hmm. And so the Hilo kind of got there as we were kind of getting the last patient. And the Almar, which is the vessel that they were on, our patrol vessel, started back to the harbor. That it became apparent to those paramedics on board that the boy was in really bad shape. The 6-year-old in particular was in really bad shape. They weren't sure, it's still at that point, if he was had a spinal injury or was just extremely hypothermic. So they're on the way back to the harbor, and they're kind of diagnosing the patients, and we're calling in ambulances and getting different modes of transport. I mean, it's a countywide effort at that point, because you know, most counties don't have 6 ambulances just sitting idle in an, right, in a neighborhood. You've got 2 or 3 maybe on calls.
Jacob, why did you guys take the fire department in the first place? Is that common practice? Did you know it was going to end up being a medical kind of thing? Like, why would the fire department go out with you guys in the first place?
So we've started back in, right around that time was when we started taking the fire department with us. So they're full paramedics. They, all of our companies in San Mateo have a full paramedics on board the fire engines. So what that does for us when we're two guys on board a vessel is it allows us to do boats and ropes. And if we get somebody that needs some advanced medical, we're, one of us is not stuck back there doing that. And then it leaves our operator to kind of handle everything himself, all the other radios on board the vessel. I mean, you guys know how these things are, running the radar and the plotter, and, you know, the sounder, depending on how
boats and ropes widely expands, right? Like it, yeah, there's a lot more than boats and ropes. Yeah. I guess.
I like that. I like that phrase.
I do too. Yeah. It makes it sound simple. Yeah. It's good.
Yeah. So what we had determined is anytime we have a potential known medical, let's get the fire guys on there. And we had some buy-in from the chiefs at the time and they said, yeah, that's great. Our guys would love to go out on the boats. Well, years later, you know, some of them are cursing us because they get seasick really, really bad. And never a nice boat ride with us. We don't call when the weather's great and we're having a good time. You know, it's right. Always, if you get seasick, you're going to get seasick with us, you know? And,
yeah. Hey, I had a salty old chief who I worked for who told me once that there's only two kinds of people. People who've been seasick and people who haven't spent enough time on boats.
Boom. You know, that's true, man. We all joke about it. I always go to this story. I got seasick once and I'll never forget. I was working in a marina. I'm working on a carb in a boat in the engine room. And I'm like, wow, I don't feel right. And I think I'm getting overtaken by gas. Like,
right.
In an East Coast marina down in Florida. And I'm like, oh man, I must be getting some sort of fumes, you know? And I'm like, I stand up and I kind of look around and I feel okay. And I go back to that little butterfly adjustment, the little set screw. I'm like, what is going on here? And it dawns on me that I'm seasick from focusing on something so minutely, looking at quarter turns, you know?
Yeah. Right. It's like, just that little bit of rocking. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. 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 And so I've heard that saying and I say the same things to the boys. I'm like, man, it's not a matter if, it's when. It will happen. Just give it time, you know, and yeah. Don't make fun of me. It looks miserable.
Solid.
Oh yeah. So the other state park guy had come off the beach, Tim Fellers, another great friend and colleague. He was talking with James in the water. I swung in, we asked James, we're still loaded up on one machine. I said, hey, you guys want to ride? You know, you're good. And you know, James and Tim being the studs they are, James was the original guy in the water with this group. He goes, no, I need to go for a swim, man. I'm gonna have some lactic acid build up. And you're gonna go for a swim?
Like, stud, man. Like,
hey, yeah,
just a mile or so. And I'm like, all right, man, you do you. You know,
you do you.
We're gonna clean up, you know. And so we went and got our other machine. My machine that I had set adrift offshore had been pushed through the reef. It was ended up, when I got to it, every alarm on the dash was on. It had low oil pressure. The hull was breached. It was sinking, had water in it. And so my partner goes, you know, he goes, what do you think? And I go, we're not leaving it. Let's go. We'll just see how far we make it. And I was able to make it back to the harbor on it, kind of a running gun, get back as quick as you can to the barn.
Dude, I'm just picturing the harbor master shaking his head like, God, man, what did this guy do now?
Yeah, like
it's all busted, the thing, alarms going off. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, they were supportive, you know. They were super happy, you know. The machine made it back. It needed a little bit of maintenance.
A little bit.
In a new motor mount, you know, no big deal. And the hull had to be fixed. And, you know, we got it up and running. And that machine ran for quite a few years afterward, actually. But I never escaped the nickname, you know, or the jokes, you know. And so the guys are constantly on me about, you know, hey, we want to get new machines. Put welding on it. Let them send them. They'll get us new machines. All that said, one last note, one of the interesting things about this particular rescue, and I know a lot of your members will appreciate this, was they get most of the patients to the ambulances, the boats are kind of heading in, and before they're there, the paramedics are like, man, we really need to life flight this kid, you know, how far out is life flight? And so they're calling on the radio, and life flights, they were extended, something like 25 minutes was going to be best case scenario. With life flight, you got to get an LZ. There's a landing zone, layman's terms. There's protocol, you know, just like anything. And so we're talking with the helo, and they were still on scene. And we just explained to him, hey, man, we got a kid. He needs life flight. And, you know, we're like 25, 30 minutes out from life flight. What do you think? And the pilot came back with, well, do I have somewhere I can land that's fairly clean? And we said, not that, he was worried about that, but he just met with, you know, pea gravel and everything else. We said, yeah, our launch ramp. And he said, all right, I'll meet you there. And he put the he put the Hilo Dolphin down, and we transported the patient from the boat to the Hilo, and they life flighted him. They did the life flight for us, took him right to Stanford. Subsequently, that child and the 11-year-old and the other four adults walked out of the hospital 2 days later. And it was really, it was just cool to see that kind of open-mindedness with, you know, you guys know, you worked with us in San Mateo, and we're close with the Coast Guard. We work close with them. We work with their pilots all the time, flying, training missions and stuff. And it was kind of neat to see that, you know, we can't break protocol most of the time, you know, and to be able to, for him to know, like, all right, like, I can make a difference, and he jumped in and did it. It was really something special, you know, and probably saved that boy's life. I mean, he was in bad shape. I mean, hardly conscious, if you can call just eyes open conscious, you know what I mean?
Right, right. And I mean, I think, Jacob, you're telling this story, and I know the last one, you told us another one in the past, like, the amount of agencies involved and the coordination between it's really impressive. I think I'm counting, what, like four or five different agencies on this one as well? Yeah.
This one would have been, you would have had state parks, fire, sheriffs, and Coast Guard. And the state parks really could break down into two, because you have the what we call the wet rangers or the lifeguards, and then you have the state park actual rangers. Right. So, yeah, it's really, really awesome, you know, and then our department. So, I mean, yeah, it's and it happens all over the country, you know, and that's kind of the cool thing about the podcast you guys are doing and this kind of series is, you know, I think so many people, you know, they hear sirens and they look around, and, you know, a lot of times there's, you know, there's comments in society or people look at you and they, oh, that must be an easy job. And they don't really understand the framework and kind of the coordination and the amount of training and effort that goes into these guys at all levels, all across the country. You know, there's different right. systems or similar systems, you know, and it's their tax dollars at work. And it's really impressive to see at every level everywhere, you know.
For sure, man. And I think, you know, I love one of the reasons that I'm drawn to maritime anyway is, you know, you might have a plane crash somewhere and people talk about it for a while. You might have a, we were talking about this earlier, Bill.
That's why I'm laughing. But, we had this discussion.
You know, like a car wreck, any number of tragedies could happen on land, right? But man, it happens at sea. People will remember that wreck for decades to come without fail. It's unbelievable. I don't know what it is about the sea that draws us all, but. There's definitely something to be said for that. We were talking about a shipwreck before that was like, and it happened 2 decades ago or something, and it's still
like 30 years ago.
30 years ago, yeah. Still impressive, you know what I mean? We were looking at pictures this morning, like, wow, this thing is, that's crazy, but just unreal, man. Sea brings us together.
Yeah, you know, it really does, and it's cool, you know, there's just a lot of good people, you know, serving here. You know, they didn't, maybe they're ex-military or ex-Coast Guard, and they've gone into these private sector jobs. And, you know, that's really what I would say to a lot of your listeners or a lot of the coasties out there is come find us. You know, there's harbors everywhere, you know, and a lot of times it's a quick police academy, a little bit of post-training, and you can continue your career depending on why or how you had to get out or when you got out. You can work for quite a while with different public agencies, and you know, the pay is great, and you know, we're a brotherhood that's very similar to what you guys experienced, pretty close, and you know, we're definitely family. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of close, but you know, there's a lot of avenues out there, and it's great, and there's just great people, you know, all around, and the sea really does bring us together. You know, I can sit down with guys like you, and we could talk, and we could shut off the podcast, and then we could start talking. Age, and it's funny, you know, we all can relate. You know, it doesn't matter if it's East Coast, West Coast, North, South, you know, Australia, wherever it is, you know, a rescuer knows, you know, I mean, you there's a different bond, you know.
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, you're talking about the wet ranger, you know. I could see his face without even knowing who he is or what he looks like. I could totally see the look. Absolutely. That you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Jacob, dude, we so much appreciate your story. We appreciate your service, man. We appreciate that you're out there making a difference every day. I'm going to ask you if you would, you know, in our last interview, you kind of talked about an initiative that you're running for someone that's close to you and for someone else in your community that's suffering the ill effects of cancer right now. Could you just kind of speak to it real fast and tell people where to look it up and where they can make a contribution or contribute any way they can?
Yeah, Roger, I'll try to not get choked up this time. You guys caught me not off guard, but I didn't know I was going to have I'm not normally that kind of guy.
Right.
So anyhow, yeah, it's Monster and Sea. We're doing a benefit paddle for a friend of mine who's come down with throat cancer. He's in the throes of it right now. He's just finished radiation and chemo. And he's, you know, now he's not able to eat or anything. He was a good guy by all rights, you know, Coast Guard Reserve, Sheriff Rescue Swimmer, firefighter for a short while, worked in the Navy. I mean, he's just been kind of all over the place. He spent his entire life, you know, helping save others. He ran the Cocoa Beach lifeguards for years. Was the head lifeguard. He in particular, he paddled the entire coast of Florida, set the Guinness World Book of Records for the fastest paddle, not stand up, but prone, just using his arms. And he broke the Guinness record of, I think he did it in 9 days. He was shooting for 10. And then he subsequently got those float style rescue tubes that you see in like Hawaii and places, Australia, on unmarked beaches or unguarded beaches. He was able to get those on every beach in the state of Florida. For his efforts, he drummed up enough money, and now he needs help. His family's in a bad spot. You know, this isn't, you know, the Monster and Sea. I should touch base with those guys real quick, or at least throw them a bone. They put this together. So I first became aware of them when I was doing another benefit paddle for cystic fibrosis some years back, and they were one of the guys that came in. They threw some money in the ring and said, "Hey, we want to sponsor you guys as well." And I started doing some research on them, and basically just a good bunch of guys. And they're up in Oregon, and they thought like, "Hey, man, grassroots. We got to help families. Like, there's kids with cancer everywhere. There's adults with cancer. These people can't pay their bills, and you know, how can we help?" And so they started this Monster and Sea company. They're basically a complete nonprofit. Nobody takes a dime in any type of support. These guys do it out of the goodness of their heart, and they're a great organization. They're a true grassroots organization. Their motto is "Go because you can." Love it. Hit close to home with me, you know, Wyatt would go. He would go right with us if I asked him, you know, if he was healthy. He'd be like, "This is awesome. Let's do it. Let's help a kid in our community." So once a year, we get together and we pick a date, or Monster and Sea picks a date, and you assemble a team of six to support somebody in your local community. And we've picked Wyatt and Hernan. Hernan's a little boy in Half Moon Bay who's got childhood leukemia, and he's on and off with treatments. And it's you're basically, we don't care if you want a paddleboard or prone paddle or whatever. It's a 24-hour relay format, so a couple hours in the water at a shot through the entire evening. And out here it gets pretty cold at night. I mean, it's cold everywhere at night, but we've got cold water, cold weather. If it's windy, stormy, we're going to go. It doesn't matter. You're going to go on the day that is picked, whether it's small craft and huge. And it's to signify the battle that these people with cancer go through every day. You know, they wake up and every day is the same. They go to bed thinking about cancer, and they wake up and I know the first thoughts in their mind are, you know, what's on the agenda for the day. And it's just to show that we're there supporting them. And, you know, at the end of it all, you know, hopefully you've raised a little bit of money to help them with bills. And we all have been touched by cancer in one way or another. You've either had a family member, and we've all been through it. We've all seen what it does to families. They have staggering bills. In fact, the first Monster and Sea that was done in Santa Cruz, the guys were able to it's nothing more than an envelope full of cash. There's no accountability. You don't have to use it for your medical bills. You don't have to use it for anything. You can decide. And so this particular family went to Hawaii for a month and stayed for a month, and they returned, and the mother passed away right after. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's just a great organization, and I can't say enough about them, and I'm super stoked to be part of it. And keep it alive, keep it going. We got to get through this COVID time.
Yeah, for sure.
So we got put on hold this year. We were going April 20th, and we've told Wyatt, like, hey, we're still going for you. This is going to give us time to get it out to even more people and help. He in particular is the breadwinner for his family, and they need our help, you know. And like I said, this guy's given his whole life to saving other people. It's like so many of your listeners, you know. And I would really encourage your listeners too. Just one more thing, get out there and do something. You know, this is a great way to start some grassroots movement in your own communities. And there's no reason this shouldn't grow. It's awesome. It's easy to set up, and you know, it's pretty easy to find six people that'll do this. We didn't have any problem. We actually set up two teams of patrolmen, and my son took it a step farther. He heard me talking about kind of the particulars and the ins and outs. He's 11, and he started a kids team. They're going to be the first kids team to do it through the night alongside us.
That's awesome.
And it's just, dude, really cool.
I love it, man. And you know what? Hey, you know what? You forgot to. So you're like, you know, anybody, you know, throughout the country could kind of do this grassroots effort if you're on the coast or near a body of water, right? You forgot it. In Half Moon Bay, man, you guys are dealing with great white sharks. It's a breeding ground right out by the Farallons. These guys are doing it in great white shark territory with the biggest break in the country right next door. So, yeah, it's definitely something doable the rest of the world. You guys set a solid example, man, for everyone to follow.
Yeah, it's important. You know, all of us, we spend our whole lives giving, whether it's in rescues or whatever line of work you're in as far as related to the maritime community. And this is just one more way. I mean, guys like you guys know, I can tell right away. I could, if I lived close to you, I'd be like, hey, let's go. This is what we're doing. You guys would be like, I'm in. Let's do it.
Let's,
you know?
It. Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
We've got guys on our team that don't even paddle, you know, and we're training with them right now and getting them kind of brought up to speed. And it's super doable. And it's a great cause, and it, you know, it, the reward that you are going to feel when you complete something like this is more than you're ever going to understand. I mean, it's just really touches close to home. I mean, you just feel great, you know, and you're not doing it for yourself, but that feeling of going out and pushing yourself when times are tough and you know, you're out there in the middle of the night and you're cold, you've been wet for hours at this point, and your arms hurt, you know, and you're thinking, you know, that person that's got cancer, they would give anything in the world to be in my position, to be out here tired and cold, and just for that to be their concern for a minute, you know, for 5 minutes to have just a mental reprieve, you know, and you think about stuff like that and you'd be amazed how far you can paddle.
Love it, man. Yeah. And we're the 24 Half Moon Bay, right?
Yeah, we are the 24 Half Moon Bay.
Yep.
If your listeners can't support us, which is completely understandable, we're in weird, crazy times right now, send a message to Wyatt. You know, you can just post it on there. He follows the page, the 24. And if you just post a simple message, you know, whatever, wherever you're stationed, you're thinking about him, whatever, just put some information out there. The guy loves it. He just finished his chemo and his radiation literally a few days ago, and he's tore up right now. There's not much more that he can do. And his, I know for a fact, because I'm close with him, that his wife will log on and she'll show him the messages, and he's trying to recover. And so, I mean, it's just huge. If you guys could just write, anybody out there could just write him a message. If you can give a buck, $5, you know, we'd be stoked to have it. It's going to go to him and another little boy that needs it, you know, and then get out there and do it yourselves next year, you know, hit up Monster and See, follow those guys on Instagram is the best way to hit them up. You can leave them a message. They'll get right back to you. They're great guys.
Solid, cool. Man. Hey, dude, appreciate you sharing your story, another story with us. And for anybody that hasn't heard Jacob's first story, it's on the new They Had to Go Out Beach Rescue series that we're going to release here shortly in partnership with the Association for Rescue at Sea. So look for that. It's either out right now as we watch this or it'll be out very shortly. And Jacob,
yeah,
dude,
we
appreciate it, man. Stay safe in what you do. Keep doing what you're doing, and keep inspiring others, man.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate it a bunch, and I appreciate what you guys are doing. You know, it's awesome, man. Giving guys time to just kind of chill out in their car and listen to some other sea stories, it's a good thing, man. It's good for everybody to know there's other guys out there that are going through the same stuff, whatever it is, you know, and it really helps. It really does.
100%,
that's
bro.
That's awesome. Hey, thanks for your time, Jacob. It was a pleasure talking to you again, as always.
Yeah, you guys stay in touch.
Yeah, we will, brother.
We'll
Thank
do.
You, dude. Later.
All right, guys.
Thanks for taking the time to listen.
If you like what this podcast is about and what we delivered, look us up at theyhadtogooutcom. or your favorite podcast platform. And like, comment, subscribe, and share so we can keep the momentum up and do bigger things going forward.
Look for a new episode every Sunday. Until then, fair winds and following seas.